Sangasya Muktasya Jnana Bhashtita Chetasya Jagyaya Charatha Karma Samagram Prabaliyate. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Becoming fully Krishna conscious, one is freed from all dualities, and thus is free from the contamination of the material modes. He can become liberated because he knows his constitutional position in relationship with Krishna, and thus his mind cannot be drawn from Krishna consciousness. Consequently, whatever he does for Krishna, who is the primeval Vishnu. Therefore, all his works are technically sacrifices, because sacrifice involves satisfying the Supreme Person, Krishna. The resultant reactions to all such work certainly merge into transcendence, and one does not suffer material effects. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. In this verse, text 23, Krishna explains what is the nature of one who works in transcendental knowledge. Krishna is explaining that one who is unattached to the modes of material nature and is fully situated in transcendental knowledge, that work merges entirely into transcendence. Bhagavad Gita describes how, while practically living within this society and world, all the work that we do is perfectly spiritualized and elevates our consciousness rather than degrades our consciousness. Depending on the particular consciousness that we have to perform work to survive. Actually, even breathing is a type of work. And every breath we take, there's a particular type of karma. Because as you're breathing, sometimes little tiny living entities that you cannot even see are caused difficulty as you're inhaling and exhaling. And you are responsible for causing those living entities inconvenience or even death. And also, the air is being provided by God under the supervision of particular demigods. And if we are taking that facility, which is not ours, there's a certain debt, karmic debt, that we are obliged to pay. So breathing is work. Your lungs are working, your mouth is working, you're taking facilities given by others. Sometimes you're even causing harm to living beings in the process. So who can subsist from doing work in this world? Every time we walk, it is a type of work. Just seeing is a type of work. The indriyas, there are 10 working senses. So we cannot survive in this world without work. Those who think that just by giving up their job and giving up their family and sitting in one place that they will not incriminate karma, they are an illusion. They're still working. They're still engaging in karmic activities. So rather than teaching a pseudo-superficial form of so-called renunciation, Krishna is explaining how our every breath, our every movement, our every word, our every thought elevates our consciousness and frees us from karmic influences rather than incriminating us in karmic influences. And this is the subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti is that process by which whatever work we do merges into transcendence and thus elevates our consciousness to higher and higher levels of realization. In this material world, Prabhupada is explaining here in the purport, there are dualities. And to survive in this world, we are always opposed by these dualities. We are always trying to fight off the negative. We are always striving to obtain the positive. We are trying to fight off distress. We are trying to obtain happiness. Fight off pain. We're striving to attain pleasure. In this way, this world is like a battlefield. It is a constant war where we are trying to battle against the negative forces. When we eat, we are trying to battle against the effects of hunger, and we're trying to strive for nourishment and satisfaction. So Bhagavad Gita being spoken on a battlefield is very appropriate because we are all in a battlefield. We're all at war practically every minute of every day. But Krishna explains how we can fight this war and attain ultimate victory. There is a saying that you can win the battle but lose the war. And that is what material life is all about. Trying to win one little battle after another, but ultimately at the time of death you realize that you've lost the war. So many little battles. The battle of paying your bills. The battle of passing your exams. The battle of doing well in your studies. The battle of performing your profession better than others as a competitor to make your living. The battle of keeping the rain out during the monsoons, keeping the heat out during the summer, keeping disease out during sickness. The battle of keeping your children from going astray. There are so many battles. The battle of right now I see some of you are battling with fatigue, trying to stay awake as I'm speaking. Sometimes insects come to attack us and we have battles against them. how many battles we fight every day. And if somehow or other we can overcome these obstacles, we feel that we are doing very well. But even if you win all these battles, but you cannot win all these battles, because the nature of this world is sometimes you are defeated. You can take the best medicine, the best, most healthy food, but still you get sick. Krishna consciousness is teaching us the best way to fight the battles we have to fight at every moment of life. But it gives the most emphasis on ultimately winning the war. The most profoundly successful materialists are those who win the most battles, but ultimately they all lose the war. They all have to surrender to cruel death, and they lose everything. That's what happens when you lose a war. You have to surrender. You have to subordinate yourself to a higher power that you don't like, that you hate. And ultimately, you have to give up everything. Just like in World War II, the German army, they occupied so many nations, they won so many battles, but ultimately when they lost the war, they had to give back everything that they won. Everything they worked so hard to attain, they had to give it all back. And then their own country became subjugated by higher powers, they lost their own independence, and then even the leader had to give up his own life out of utter frustration. So he won so many battles, battle after battle after battle after battle, but then when he lost the war, he lost everything, everything that was gained. The British were like that also. They conquered India through so many divisive ways. And of course, there was Subhash Chandra Bose, Netaji, who was mobilizing all sorts of armies and forces which the British knew they could not defeat. They knew they were helpless. On one side, they were being beaten to death by the Germans. All of London was defeated. On the other side, Subhash Chandra Bose was creating big, big armies. In fact, Hitler was sending the captured Indian soldiers to Subhash Chandra Bose to fight against the British. And the best soldiers in the British army were the Indians, many of them, Sikhs, Gurkhas. They were very strong, powerful. And at the same time, Mohandas Gandhiji, he was creating such a terrible mess within India, as far as the British were concerned, total uncooperation, terrible, scandalous press all over the world. So although they won so many wars, ultimately they won so many battles, they lost the war. They had to give everything up. They built so many beautiful Victoria VT stations. The Indians didn't build that, the British built that. The best buildings in India were built by the British. But now, who's enjoying it? The British, they have to get a visa, and then they can come and see and go like this. But they have no proprietorship, they have no control, nothing. They lost it all. So much investment. India was the crown of the British Empire. Calcutta. They built the Victoria Memorial. Such a beautiful, beautiful structure. And so many others. And now, it's not even theirs. Now the pigeons just control it. And the service of the Indians is to clean up what the pigeons do. So, throughout history, it has been revealed to us how men, through so much works, through so much effort, fight their battles, but in the end lose the war and must surrender everything, including their very lives. So Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to fight this battle in a way that we can win the war. Ultimately, although there are so many small battles in life, so many problems we have to face in our practical living conditions, the enemy of ignorance is most formidable. Ignorance is that whatever we do in misconception. We think that we are the doer. We think that we are the enjoyer. We think we are this temporary body and this temporary mind. That is ignorance. And the mind is a constant enemy, always accepting and rejecting, always hankering and lamenting. And the senses are also enemies, because they are never satisfied for very long. They are always wanting more and more and more gratification. And the soul is being defeated by the enemies of the senses and the mind moment after moment. And this human form of life is meant to learn how to conquer the mind and senses through transcendental knowledge, and through applying that transcendental knowledge to our life. It is explained here that we are all eternally servants of Krishna. We are all pure spirit. We are beyond the dualities of material existence. And to act, to think, to speak, to live according to that principle of eternal servitude to God is knowledge. And to live without reference to that truth is ignorance. Arjuna, this great, great warrior, he actually won the war before the Battle of Kurukshetra. The battle on the field of Kurukshetra was a small battle. There were so many millions and millions and millions of soldiers, all the great kings from all over the world, they were all assembled there. There were hundreds of millions of soldiers on that battlefield. It was the greatest battle in history. But actually, it was a very small battle. The real war was won as Arjuna was sitting on the chariot with Krishna before he even lifted his bow. Arjuna was in illusion. He did not know who he was, what he was to do. He did not know what was truth. He did not understand what is the goal of life. He was victimized by his mind and his material attachments. And in that condition, what did he do? He surrendered to Krishna. When he surrendered to Krishna, Krishna filled him with all transcendental knowledge and taught him how to live according to his own desire. And through that enlightened understanding of life, through conquering his own mind and through conquering his own senses by surrendering them at the feet of God, he won the war. And then this small battle was not very difficult at all to overcome. Similarly, however difficult our circumstances may be in this world, we must know that the real war that we must win is against our own mind and senses, which are victims of ignorance. By surrendering to Krishna, by hearing from him submissively, by accepting his words as our life, by acting according to his instructions, we can be liberated from all of the sufferings, limitations, and bondages of this world. And ultimately, we can become free. Material existence keeps us all like prisoners, captive by the dualities of material existence. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to be free from this captivity. And when we are enlightened by this knowledge, and we work accordingly, everything we do frees us, elevates us. And that is really what human life is meant to accomplish. Elevation of consciousness. Krishna says that the work of a man unattached to the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature are called gunas. Guna is sometimes translated as a rope. Ropes keep you bound. Goodness, passion, ignorance, raja, sattva, tama, are like ropes that keep us bound to birth and death, to illusion. To become unattached to these modes of material nature is very difficult. In fact, Krishna explains, it is virtually impossible by our own effort. Because these modes of material nature are being conducted by God himself. Therefore, they are all powerful. Only if we surrender to Krishna can we be freed from the modes of material nature. When we serve Krishna, then our activities are no longer under the influence of the modes of material nature. Mahatmanastu mam bharata daivim prakritimati vajantyananyamanaso jatvabhutadimavyayam. And then there can be real happiness. Because our soul is reunited with its natural condition of consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, then there is real happiness, real love. To the degree we become attached to Krishna and Krishna's service, we become detached from the modes of material nature. To the degree we are not attached to Krishna and Krishna's service, we are bound and attached to the modes of material nature. So Krishna consciousness is based on these simple, sublime teachings of Bhagavad Gita. It teaches us the art of living. It teaches us how, with every breath, with every heartbeat, with every word, with every action, with every thought, we can engage in real yoga, real spiritual life, by doing it in consciousness of our service relationship with Krishna. When we study, studying is such a taxing process, what to speak of working. There are so much expected of us, so many pressures, so many anxieties, so many problems to solve. In fact, material life means one problem after another. You cannot solve all problems, individually or collectively. As soon as you solve one problem, another problem will come. We're always thinking, if only this problem is solved, everything will be wonderful. But somehow or other, there's the euphoria of solving a particular problem. But then practically immediately after, there's another. And if we ever think that we'll solve all problems and be happy, that is a great illusion. On the global level, America, Europe, India, so many of these great nations, the greatest threat was communism. It was a big problem because the communists wanted to conquer the world. They made it very clear that the whole world should be like them. So how to solve this problem? They spent billions of dollars a day building bombs to prevent the communists from taking over. And when the communists took over Cuba, such terrible anxiety, such a major problem. And East Berlin and West Berlin were divided. Half was communist, half was free world, as they say. Divided cities, divided countries. Such a terrible problem. And then, just a few years ago, communist was officially finished. They tore down the Berlin Wall. The Soviet Union had their first elections. And the whole world was dancing and celebrating. Mostly they were celebrating by drinking alcohol and having all sorts of illicit activities. And they were thinking, now the problems of the world are solved. But then, Yugoslavia, Bosnia, so many things happening. The economy of Russia is falling to pieces. So many civil wars in so many states. It's actually worse than it was before. So many emergency, terrible situations. Still, AIDS is spreading. We didn't really. What's the problem with self? It's the history of the world. It's the history of life. One problem after another. One major crisis into another. And you cannot change that. You cannot stop that. But you can transcend that. And that is the only real peace. To understand the nature of this world and to act in Krishna consciousness so we can do our best to live in this world, to help others to make real solutions to the real problems. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, there is only one problem, and that is a lack of God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Because this world is full of unlimited problems, and if you are not Krishna conscious, you are just submerged in this ocean of problems. But if you are Krishna conscious, you are transcendental to all the problems of this world, even the problem of death. So this is the only real problem. This is the war, to come to the platform of real knowledge. And then we can do the needful in this world. We can fight all our little battles in this world. But in the process, we are continuously proceeding forward toward liberation from the real, only major problem of ignorance or a lack of Krishna consciousness. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, who is the speaker of the Gita, He came because he knew that as time proceeds in this age of Kali, people will not be able to truly understand and practice Gita as it is. So he gave us, through his own life, example and teachings, the simple method of coming to the real conclusion of Bhagavad Gita's philosophy. Krishna explains, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, that you always think of me. In thinking of me, you find shelter in me. In finding shelter in me, you transcend the modes of material nature. The ultimate goal of the Gita is to always think of Krishna and to perform all of our work in remembrance of Krishna, in love for Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to always think of Krishna, by chanting his name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. It's actually quite easy to chant the names of Krishna. And by doing so properly, in the good association of sincere devotees, that remembrance of Krishna provides us the spiritual depth by which we can perform all of our works in Krishna consciousness. Our every breath will eventually be done in Krishna consciousness by constantly and properly practicing this method of chanting Krishna's holy names. Lord Chaitanya was very much kind, very much compassionate in delivering the name of Krishna to everyone. And the greatest fortune is to receive the name of Krishna, to receive his instructions on how to chant the names of Krishna. Of course, we must very carefully understand these teachings of Gita, because without a philosophical, scientific understanding of life, it will be very, very difficult to resist the various temptations and illusions that are put before us. By chanting the names of Krishna, by remembering Krishna through this means, we have the spiritual strength and we have all of the necessary paraphernalia to fight this battle. But the philosophical understanding of how to apply it to our life moment after moment is very important. Krishna consciousness is not simply sentimental. It is very scientific. It is the highest knowledge and education. It is the greatest philosophy. So these two things have to be combined, Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing from Bhagavad Gita, understanding this science and philosophy, applying it to our life, and having the spiritual strength to do so through the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And of course, when we associate with nice devotees, like all of you, then it becomes very wonderful, very enjoyable, very practical to follow this wonderful life of devotion. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
summary of the Gita is to chant the holy name of the Lord. Gita has been called as a great secret, a great mystery, and a very confidential knowledge. But the way you say it so confidently, that it is a very straightforward, obvious fact that the whole conclusion of the secret is to simply chant Krishna's name. Why does it so appear that millions of people who read the Gita don't seem to come to this understanding of simply taking Krishna's name and perfecting their lives?
Those who read the Gita, you say?
Most people who read it. They seem to be thinking that Gita has to be something else, but not chanting.
What do they say?
They might talk about doing their duties in a more unattached way, or that's what they think, that is more from the karma. They simply pick up that particular type of some slogans which we talk about, Mantmana Bhava Mata Bhakto and Sarada Mata Pitari. We might talk about some other slogans. Think that that is more important probably. Why do the leader come to a different conclusion than what is meant to be?
Krishna explains himself. Bhakto Sime Shakha Chechi Rahasyam Heta Dutamala. He tells Arjuna that this is a great mystery, my teachings, but because you are my devotee, you can understand. Those who are not devotees of the Lord cannot understand what is Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains very clearly that any work that is not done in devotion to Him, as sacrifice to Him, is a product of ignorance and bondage, however much detached you are. Krishna says you must be detached from the fruits of your work, but He also says you must offer the fruits of your work to Him in devotion. So those who say that just by working and being detached is the conclusion of Gita is taking certain verses but omitting the most important verses. Sarvadharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me, to Krishna. This is what every verse of the Gita is leading to, this conclusion. So the problem is that people do not want to understand the truth of Gita. People want to derive their own conclusions from the Gita. And they want to teach their own conclusions to others in the name of the Gita. It is like a doctor. It is like an unqualified person putting the title MD after his name. Sometimes they're called quack. Quack. Means they have no qualification, but they claim qualification. Sometimes they call themselves MD. Sometimes they tell you that they have graduated from a great institution like Sion Medical College. And then the people, oh, you graduated from Sion Medical College. Pranams, pranams. Please heal my disease. I have complete faith in you. And then the person, according to his own concoction or speculation, he treats you. But on the authority of a proper institution, with the authority of certain titles, like medical doctor. And this way people cheat. So people do the same thing. If you want to give your own idea, if you want to teach one your own speculation, and you want it to be accepted with authority, You tell them, this is what it says in Gita. And you take certain verses out of context and explain everything that way and make it appear that this is what Krishna says. And in this way you have authority and people will surrender to you and worship you and follow you. And in this way, there are so many spiritual quacks. But Krishna explains right in the Gita, evam parampara praptam tadvadi pranipatena, that if you want to understand this truth, you have to hear from a proper spiritual master, coming in a proper disciplic succession of great devotees of the Lord, who are devotees, who present the Gita as it is. Just because there are so many quacks, it doesn't mean there's no real doctors. Just because there's so many people abusing Sion Medical College by claiming to have been trained with their false degrees in New York City for $15, you can purchase a authentic certificate of degree from any college in America. For $15, you can get a PhD at Harvard University. And that the degree is exactly in replica to the fiber of the paper that Harvard University uses to give their degrees, with the same exact print. And if you pay a few more dollars, you can even get a signature from the dean of students. Whether he signs it or not, nobody knows, but it's identical. And if you put that in your office, Harvard Medical School, people, oh, very nice, very nice. How many people, when they go to a doctor, do they check with the college to make sure he really graduated? Have you ever done that? You go to a doctor, you see his certificates. Do you ever say, well, let me check? And you go to the registration, admissions, records, and you find out, in 1971, did he really graduate? And most colleges will say, don't bother us. Too much trouble. But you can find out. But how many people go through all that trouble? Here in India, you probably have to bribe the person in the office just to look in the records. So in this way, there are so many cheaters. And the best cheaters are the people who fool you to think that they have the greatest authority. The Bhagavad Gita is the greatest authority for knowledge in the world. People have faith that the words of the Gita are true. So if you just certify that I am a teacher of Gita, and you see, this is my certificate, then people accept, yes? But Bhagavad Gita is so clear, it is so easy to understand. If you just have the guidance of a proper spiritual teacher. But if you do not, it becomes very difficult. So many speculations, so many interpretations, so many adulterations, so much confusion. So yes, so many people read the Gita and hear so many interpretations of the Gita and come to such wrong conclusions of the Gita. But throughout the Gita, Krishna says there is no truth superior to me, that he is the source of everything, that devotion to him is the perfection of life. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante. Anjayat mai sarvamidam protam sutrimani vinayam. again and again and again. Practically every sloka of the Gita is leading us to the understanding that devotion to Krishna, the absolute truth, is the perfection of life. Is there any other questions? Yes.
As you mentioned in the lecture that everybody is fighting a battle, and at the end they are fighting so many battles, and at the end we lose the war. So how do I know that person who didn't in the material life, he has won the war, and a person, a devotee, who has lead a life to of devotion, completely devotion, so devoted to God. He has won the war. How do I know what happens after death?
How do you know what happens after death? Through knowledge. It is beyond our sense perception in conditioned state of consciousness to understand what happens after death. But Bhagavad Gita and the great scriptures and the great saintly persons, they tell us. In this way we can understand. So many parts of our life we have to accept higher authority to understand what is beyond our capacity to perceive. We understand from Gita that we are the eternal soul, and we can logically logically come to the same conclusion that the soul is the giver of life to this body. It is the soul that is seeing through your eyes and hearing through your ears. It is the soul that is the witness of all the activities of this body. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us that this body is a machine. It is a yantra, a machine that we are temporarily residing in and utilizing for various purposes. But the soul is separate from this machine. The soul existed before it came into this machine, and it will continue to exist after this machine is destroyed. And Bhagavad Gita teaches us in simple language how we can perceive this even at our present state of consciousness. Dehinosmin yata dehe komaram yoganam jara tatha dehan tara praptya dhirastatra namoyate. You are a little baby, then a small boy or girl, then your youth, soon you will become middle-aged, old-age. Through all of these transitions, the mind is changing, the values of life are changing, the physical constitution of the body is changing. Everything is changing. But we remain the same person, witnessing all of these experiences in life. That we can understand. So what is the nature of that soul? What is the nature of that consciousness? The Gita is teaching. It is part of God. It is beyond birth. It is beyond death. Najayate mriyate va kadachin nayanbhupabhavitabhanavuya. And the Bhagavad Gita teaches that according to the activities and the consciousness that is developed within this life, that is what determines the destination of the soul after it leaves this body. That is not difficult to understand. It is not difficult to believe. when we have a little bit of transcendental knowledge, it becomes nothing more than common sense to realize, to understand that you are not this body, you are the soul. It becomes nothing more than common sense with a little knowledge to know that the soul is everlasting. It's not changing. So the question is, what happens to the soul after death? The same Gita that gives us the information that is so logical and conclusive in our life teaches us what is beyond our understanding to know on our own. That if you remember Krishna, you go to Krishna at the time of death. If your consciousness is in the mode of ignorance, you glide down to the lower species of life. If it is in the mode of passion, you take birth accordingly to various materialistic situations. So for a devotee, it is common sense. It doesn't take much to convince us what the real war is, to liberate the soul from ignorance, and to reconnect the soul with Krishna. So you may not be able to see where the soul goes after it dies, but you can understand by the quality of a person's life where a soul will go. If a person is Krishna conscious, that soul will certainly go to Krishna. And then he wins the war. Or she wins the war. We are not talking about belief, we are talking about fact. We are talking about a great science, which is based on truths. And we don't simply believe these truths, but we have complete faith in these truths because they are based on the highest authority. And besides that, they simply make the only real sense. When you understand Krishna conscious philosophy, you understand that nothing else in the whole world makes any real sense. Because it is all based on the wrong premise. The wrong premise is that I am this body, that I am the enjoyer. Anyone else have questions? Yes? The whole lecture was about that. But you came late. So if you hear the tape, you can get your question answered. Yes?
You said the conclusion of all Vedic scriptures is Bhagavad Gita, and you said the summary of Bhagavad Gita is the chanting the holy name, and this is the eternal knowledge. So it is followed in all previous yugas also. But in the previous yugas, the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is interpreted or understood by the authorities in a different way. See, for instance, in different yugas, the regulative principles to be followed and the path of self-realization was different. So is it that
What is your question?
How is it that same Bhagavad Gita has given the different conclusions to the authorities?
The different yugas?
Yeah.
for different yugas.
Is there anywhere in Bhagavad Gita it's clearly specified? Chanting the holy name is the process of self-realization.
Yes. Krishna explains, Satatam Kirtayantama. My devotees are always chanting my name. But most of all, he's explaining how my devotees are always thinking of me. And Krishna is not different than his name. Therefore, the same Krishna, in the form of Lord Chaitanya, taught us just the most simple, sublime and practical means in this age of Kali Yuga for always remembering Krishna, which is the chanting of his holy name. As far as other yugas, yes, Dhruva Maharaj, he was always thinking of Krishna by performing very, very severe tapasya and performing tremendous, tremendous difficult processes of meditation in Satya Yuga. And at the same time, he was always chanting Krishna's name. So in various yugas, there are various ways of always remembering Krishna. But in Kali Yuga, these other ways are impossible. We are not fit to perform them. Yayato, it is explained that the same result that one achieves through meditation and Satya Yuga, through great, great performance of Yajna and Treta Yuga, through worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Dwapara Yuga, can be achieved simply by chanting the holy names in Kali Yuga. So you are in Kali Yuga. So why should we be so concerned with how we interpret Gita in other yugas? To always remember Krishna is the eternal message of the Gita. And Lord Chaitanya, who is the Yuga Avatar, teaches us that this is the way in Kali Yuga, through Harinam Sankirtan. And we could read in the scriptures how others follow this eternal truth of Sanatana Dharma in other yugas, but they do not apply to us. Somehow or other, you were born in this age of Kali Yuga. If you try to pretend you're in Satya Yuga or Dwapara Yuga or Treta Yuga, you will simply become bewildered. This is the age of Kali, all around you. So you should accept the prescribed medicine.
Also said that if we chant him, then there should not be any anxiety, so nobody should cause us any anxiety. Can you please elaborate on that?
Where does it say that?
We've heard people say that if you chant...
That no one will cause you anxiety?
Yes, we heard many people say that.
Who said like that?
In fact, in the yesterday picture, Maharaj who came to me, he was saying that if you're chanting the holy name, then nothing in this world should cause you any anxiety.
That means you're immune from everybody coming to cause you anxiety. It doesn't mean no one comes to cause you anxiety. People will always come to cause you anxiety, whether you chant or do not chant. But you can become so joyful in Krishna that you don't mind people coming to cause you anxiety. And become transcendental to their influences. But they will come. They will definitely come. And when you're a devotee, sometimes they even come more. But that's good. It gives you more reason to chant. Yeah. Even Lord Chaitanya. He was always chanting. But still people would come to cause him anxiety. One time he was walking through Navadvip and some atheists, these atheists were actually great scholars, pundits, but they did not have a proper understanding. They very arrogantly approached him and they started criticizing him. So what is this, all this chanting of the holy names, what have you gotten from it? Are you wealthy? Are you famous? What have you gotten from all this? You're all just chanting because you're sentimentalists. Better you chant the holy names of Durga and get material benedictions. We know that actually that's what you're probably doing. In this way, they were insulting him in so many ways. And Lord Chaitanya, he just walked away from them. And he went to Srivas's house. And they started to have kirtan. And Lord Chaitanya stopped the kirtan. And he said, because today I have associated with materialistic people, I am not tasting the bliss of kirtan. And then he ran to the river Ganges and jumped in. And Haridas Thakur and Srivas, they jumped, or Haridas and Nityananda Prabhu, they jumped in and Nityananda Prabhu took him by the hair and Haridas took him by the feet and they took him to the bank of the Ganges. They said, why have you done this? Why did you try to drown yourself? He said, because I have no love for Krishna. What is the use of my living in this life if I have no love for Krishna? So Lord Chaitanya wanted to show us by his example through this wonderful pastime how devotees are very careful not to subject themselves more than required to the influences of materialistic people and materialistic civilization. But at the same time, he taught different lessons at different times. There were always, constantly people chastising the devotees for chanting the holy names. On another occasion, they were threatening Srivas, his devotee, that we will beat him, we will uproot his house and throw it in the Ganges. They were making up all lies against him. They were saying, we know what he does when he's chanting all night. He has beautiful women in his house he's having sex with. He's drinking liquor, and that's why we're hearing all these loud kirtans. So many people can say anything about anyone, the most spotless, pure devotees. And then they were saying that soon the king, at that time India was under Muslim rule, the king is coming with boatloads of soldiers. And they will certainly imprison Srivas. And they'll probably imprison all of us for being in the same town as him. They were abusing in so many ways, threatening in so many ways. But Srivas was just chanting the holy name, worshipping the Lord. And it's a long and beautiful story. But Lord Chaitanya came to Srivas's house and explained that if you have faith in me, you should know I will always protect you. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do you have to fear? If the king comes with his boat of soldiers, I am within his heart. I can easily change his mind if I so desire. And if he doesn't change his mind, then I can defeat him in argument and logic with philosophy. But if he still doesn't change his mind, I can tell the king that you get all of your pundits and you get all of your holy men around you and you get all of the animals from the kingdom and you chant your mantras and get these animals to cry in love of God. And when they fail, then I will bring in elephants and all sorts of animals from the forests, as well as the animals from the kingdom. And I will begin to chant. And when I chant, the king, all of his pundits, all of his ministers, and all of the animals will all cry in ecstasy and roll in the ground chanting Krishna's names. And if you do not believe I can do this, you just watch. And he looked at Narayani, the little 4-year-old niece of Srivas, and he said, chant Krishna's name in ecstasy. And she began to chant, and then tears started flowing from her eyes profusely. Her body began to tremble, and she fell to the ground in ecstatic love. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to show that he is always the protector of his devotees. Haridas Thakur was always chanting, but he was beaten in 22 marketplaces severely. But he was not bothered, because he was always feeling the bliss of Krishna's holy name. So in this material world, whoever you are, whatever you do, people will come to disturb you, people will come to agitate you. Do not think that if you're not a devotee, everyone will be nice to you. Everyone is troubled in this world. But as a lotus flower, even though in the muddiest pond of water, remains always clean and fresh, similarly, if we always keep our heart and our mind with Krishna, then even in the muddy conditions of this material world, where there are so many problems, so many aggressors, we can always remain pure, clean, and transcendental. So don't think that when you become a devotee, everyone will be nice to you. When you become a devotee, you should try to become nice to everyone else. And by your niceness and your devotion, you can rise above all the anxieties of this material existence. Actually, the only reason why people's harsh words hurt you is because you're attached. If your skin is healthy and someone pinches you, it doesn't hurt. But if there's an infection and someone pinches that infection, it hurts very bad. If you have a boil, if someone squeezes your boil, it's very painful. If someone touches your boil, it's very painful. If it's a serious boil, if someone breathes on it, it's very painful. If it's a severe boil, if someone even looks at it, it's painful. What to speak when someone punches it or kicks it or lances it? Very painful. But if there's no boil, you can squeeze, you can touch, you can breathe, you can look, and there's no problem. So when people deal with you harshly, when people make lies against you, more painful than lies are when people tell the truth about you. And you've actually done something wrong, huh? If someone makes up a lie against you, it's very painful. But if you've done something very bad and people talk about that, that's even more painful. So either way, but if you're unattached to your own pride and prestige, then it just doesn't hurt. They can say anything. chanting Krishna's names and living according to these pure principles of Gita helps us to live above our prestige, live above the consciousness of false pride. And then people can say anything, and we become happy. When people insult us, we become happy. We think, oh, very nice. If you only knew how bad I was, then you would have so much more to say. Thank you. When someone insults a devotee, they take it as a compliment. They understand that, oh, I'm so full of bad qualities, and you are so kindly informing me of how I can improve myself. Haribo, is there any other questions? Yes?
Right from childhood, we have been taught that of the three gods, Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu, Vishnu is a 15% of God. And when you come to Krishna consciousness, you find that Krishna is a 15% of God. But then, at the time of the Mahabharata war, you find that Krishna, in order to show Arjuna his true position, he shows him the 400 form of Vishnu. Now, does this, I mean, here there is some motivation as to why Krishna has to show the 400 form to Arjuna to show that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that case, does it mean that Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And again, in Bhagavata, first canto, there is a mention that Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, are these all same? Or?
There is no difference between Krishna and Vishnu. They are the same one supreme divine person, but simply manifesting themselves in different ways. Krishna is the supreme object of love. Even after Arjuna saw Vishnu, he prayed, "Please become Krishna again." Yes? First he saw the Virat Rupa, the universal form, and he said, "Please, take away this unbearable sight." And then he became Lord Vishnu with four arms, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Because Lord Vishnu is appearing in a way that it is not at all human. Humans don't have four arms, holding conch shell, lotus, disc, and club. But Krishna, although he is a supreme Godhead, Vishnu himself, the original source of Vishnu, in this original form, he appears like a human being. But actually, all human beings are made after his image, as the Bible says. Man was made in the image of God. Huh? When Krishna appeared to reciprocate such intimate levels of love, he appeared like a human being, although he displayed the supreme opulences and excellences of God. As a seven-year-old little child with two arms, he held the Govardhan Hill with one finger. He killed the greatest of the asuras. By the time he spoke in Bhagavad Gita, this two-armed form of Sri Krishna had already married 16,108 wives in Dwarka and have expanded himself to live with each one of them simultaneously. So the Vishnu form is a form that is not of this world. But Krishna appeared to be a form of this world, although he was not of this world. So after he showed the Virat Rupa, he wanted to show that I am also the source of Vishnu. I can take that form too. So he was showing that he was the source of the Virat Rupa, he was the source of time, and he was also the source of Vishnu. He was revealing all of these great truths to Arjuna. But Arjuna was not satisfied with Virat Rupa, and he was not satisfied with Vishnu. He wanted to see Krishna as he was, because in that form he could have the most loving, friendly relationship. Is there any other questions? Yes? Do you have to go at any time? Yes.
To chant Krishna's
Where does it say that? It says it's easier, no doubt. Krishna says, Klesho dikataraste sam, avyakta shakti cheta sam, avyakta hi gatira dukam, dehavad viravapyate. It says, for those who try to concentrate on the formless, inconceivable, unmanifested truth, it is very difficult, very, very difficult. Therefore, you should simply meditate on my personal form. But then he also explains bhaktya avajinananti, that through bhakti, through devotion, only can you understand this divine form standing before you. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. He also explains that my form is the source of the impersonal Brahman. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavamam papadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudulabha. After many births of spiritual practices, when one comes to real knowledge, he surrenders to me, Vasudev. Nowhere in Gita does Krishna explain that the impersonal is superior to the personal. Throughout Gita, Krishna explains that his form is transcendental. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yogiti tattva. My pastimes, my form, they are transcendental. Satchidananda. To understand the highest truth means to understand that Krishna is in his supreme state. He is a person. The highest realization is that. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajganavadvayam brahmeti paravakmeti bhagavaniti shaktiti. Brahman is the most preliminary understanding of the Supreme Truth. Brahman is the understanding of the energy of the Lord. Paramatma is understanding the localized, all-pervading presence of the Lord. But Bhagavan, the Supreme Form, the Personality of Godhead, is the source of all energies. This is the conclusions of the Gita, of the Bhagavat, of all the great scriptures. Therefore, anyone can say anything. It is the easiest process, and it is the most complete process. Therefore, one who has sufficient intelligence will accept it. People say that bhakti is easy, but the impersonal meditation, it is more difficult. That is true, no doubt. But what do you get for all your labor? You get practically nothing. It is practically impossible to follow, and what do you get from it? At the most, you can get freedom from pain, liberation. But real love, real bliss, can only come by surrendering in pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God. Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. And throughout Gita, Krishna explains who he is. He is Krishna. Nowhere in Gita does Krishna just in any way indicate that he is an impersonal, formless existence. Throughout Gita, Krishna emphasizes with great care that he is the personality of God. So therefore we do not care for this misleading propaganda. We accept the words of the great acharyas. Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of these greatest acharyas, they all exclaimed that the ultimate goal is to understand God in his personal form. And even Shankaracharya himself, who is the greatest proponent of impersonal philosophy, Narayana Paro Vyaktat, he explained that the divine form of Narayana is transcendental, beyond time, beyond space, the ultimate goal of life. And to his own followers, who were so much arguing and debating, just as you are today, he told them as his last instruction, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Samprapte Sanide Kali, Nahi Nahi Sukhukhun Kali. That you should worship Govinda. Three times, for emphasis, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. You fools, you asses. All of this word jugglery will not save you at the time of death. Only the beautiful form of Govinda can save you at the time of death. Would you like to add anything, Gauranga? Something. We didn't bring you here just to carry a bottle of water. All gods are one, but also different. A devotee gives all respect to all living beings. What to speak of great personalities? The various demigods are empowered servants of the Supreme God. This is explained in the scriptures. Krishna explains kamaistaita kritagyana, that those who have less intelligence, they approach the various demigods, devatas, for material benedictions. But then he explains that they do not know that whatever benedictions, whatever powers they have, they are getting from me. If you disrespect the demigods, if you disrespect the gods, then you are committing a great offense. So we must honor and respect all of the great representatives of Krishna, who are empowered representatives of the Lord. But at the same time, as Brahma Samhita explains in so many beautiful verses, they are all various manifestations of the one God. But that one God, in his complete fullness and supreme opulence, is Krishna. This is the verdict of the scriptures, and this is the realization that the great acharyas have handed down. In these scriptures, there are so many wonderful stories of how various of the demigods, how they are subordinate to Krishna, how ultimately they take shelter and surrender to Krishna. Krishna explains in Gita, when he revealed his universal form to Arjuna, he showed him how all the demigods are emanating from him. But why do people worship various gods? This is the most important question. Mostly to get material resources. For success in business, for good health, for good husbands or wives, for long lives, maybe for liberation. But devotees don't want any of these things. They want unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service. People who want that are taught to go to Krishna, because Krishna is the bestower of this supreme most benediction. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, we read how even they are great devotees of Krishna. And of course, the scriptures explain in very, very deep philosophical terms what is the relationships between Vishnu Tattva, Shiva Tattva, Jiva Tattva. What are the relationships between the Supreme Godhead and the various manifestations, representations of the Supreme Godhead. It is a great science. The problem here in India is people have forgotten the philosophy and science of their own scriptures, and they've just become very sentimental, very ritualistic, and everything's one. In one sense, everything is one, but in a higher sense, there is gradations of that oneness. You understand? And what Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat, the Puranas, the Vedic scriptures are teaching is the entire science of the Absolute Truth and how it relates to the relative truths. And when we understand this with philosophy and science, we understand how Krishna is the fountainhead, the supreme source of everything. The demigods do not exist beyond this material universe. The demigods are generally people with particular posts within this universe for particular functions of this universe on behalf of God. Vayu is the lord of the wind, Indra is the lord of the rains, Agni is the lord of fire, Brahma is creator, Shiva is destroyer, Vishnu is maintainer. But these are all temporary services within the realm of illusion or material existence. What is beyond this realm of illusion? What is beyond? And that is ultimately what the Vedas are teaching. Therefore, in Gita it says, Vedaishta sarveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva shaham. Krishna says, by all the Vedas, ultimately I am to be known. So unfortunately, like every religion throughout the world, the real essence of the philosophy, the science, and the goal is forgotten, and just very, very sentimental rituals are put in its place. Yatama tatapat. Anything you worship is all right. It doesn't matter. That is modern social Hinduism. But it is not according to Shastra. It is not according to real history. It is not according to philosophy or science. So what we are speaking is on the basis of that. It is explained that when you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. And this is especially and specifically referring to the various gods. The Bhagavad says that the various gods are like the various branches, fruits, twigs on the tree of life. But it is explained that Krishna is the root. And if you water the root of the tree, automatically every branch, every twig is satisfied. If you worship Krishna, every one of the demigods is supremely satisfied. But if you worship all the gods but you forget the root, then the whole tree will be unhealthy. So we must understand beyond just what we are taught when we are children if we want to come to higher conclusions. And this is not sectarian. This is just reality. When Krishna appeared on earth, he proved it. The greatest of the demigods, Indra, he thought, I am supreme. And then Krishna insulted him. You know the story? Krishna insulted him like anything. They were going to do this big, big puja for Indra, the Brijvasis. And Krishna told Nanda Maharaj, forget it. Just worship this mountain called Govardhan. And because Krishna was so charming, they could not refuse anything he asked. So they worshiped Govardhan Hill. So Indra sent his greatest weapons, the Sanvataka clouds. The clouds that destroy the whole universe, the whole earth at the end of the millenniums. And Krishna just took the Govardhan Hill and lifted it for 7 days and 7 nights. And Indra realized that this little 7-year-old boy, he's completely defeated me. He was even throwing his thunderbolts, and nothing happened. So then Indra came and surrendered to Krishna. And another time, Brahma. Brahma's the greatest of the... He's above Indra. He's the father of everyone in this universe. He stole all Krishna's friends for one full year, and Krishna manifested himself as all the friends, exact replicas. And when Brahma came and saw that everybody he stole was still there, he was confused. How is this possible? And then every one of the friends turned into the forearm form of Narayan. And then he was completely bewildered. And then the whole scene disappeared and it was just little Krishna, little boy holding some food in his hand looking for his friends. And then Brahma realized that he is the Supreme Godhead. And Brahma came down and surrendered. And there's a story of Lord Shiva. And one of his devotees, Brakasura, was tearing off his flesh and putting it in the fire and chanting mantras to Shiva. And Shiva finally, he thought, this person, what nonsense. So he was so dissatisfied, this devotee, because Shiva was not giving him darshan, that he was about to cut off his head and put it in the fire. So finally Shiva came and said, all right, what do you want? He said, I want the benediction that whoever's head I touch will die. His head will crack. So Shiva, you can have this benediction. It is my duty to give to you. You have performed so much tapasya. So then this Brakasura looked at Parvati and was thinking, oh, I like this Parvati very much. She should be mine. So he went to touch Shiva's head. So what should she, if Shiva lets him touch his head and his head doesn't crack, then he's a liar. So he ran away. And Brakasura was chasing and Shiva was running. And everyone was watching. And then Krishna came. And Krishna disguised himself as a little boy. And he said to Brakasura, what you are doing? He said, I'm going to touch Shiva's head because he gave me the benediction that if I touch his head, it will crack and he will die. And then I will be the husband of Parvati. And Krishna was very expert with making nice words. So he said, oh, you think that his head will crack? His head will not crack. Shiva is always telling these lies. He gives all benedictions, they never work. You'll touch his head, everyone's watching, and when his head doesn't crack, everyone will laugh at you. So better you test to make sure it works before you touch his head. The best thing is touch your own head. And then you will know. And you'll see what type of storyteller this Shiva is. So he said, yes, that is a very good idea. So he touched his head. And his head cracked. And then Shiva said, thank you, you saved my life, Krishna. He surrendered. In this way, all of the gods surrender to Krishna at one time or another. And besides that, Krishna is so beautiful. He's so charming. He's the supreme reservoir of ras, of loving relationships. And we do not find that in any of the other demigods. Do we find any of the demigods where you can become gopi and dance with them? You can become gopa and play with them? You can become mother like Jashoda? Krishna exchanges the highest degrees of love. And we do not find in any scripture, any god that affords such intense, ecstatic emotion of loving relationships. Only Krishna, who is Rasaraj. And these relationships are eternal. They are beyond the benedictions that the gods provide us in this world. Hare Krishna. Does that answer your question? Is there any other? Yes?
You said earlier to transmigrating.
our next body is decided by our mind.
While transmigrating,
our next body is decided by our mind. So at the same time, we are transmigrating in this life also. And the soul is continuously changing our new different bodies. So how this aspect should be helpful in developing our consciousness? Means developing our devotional service.
Say again, please. I didn't hear so well.
Maharaj, while transmigrating,
mm-hmm.
our next body is decided by the state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, our soul is changing new bodies. Means first it was in childhood, then it became youth, and then old. So this state is also affected by our mind. So how will this be helpful in our devotional service? Means we should think about Krishna like this.
How will understanding these scientific truths about the nature of the mind and the soul help us in our devotional service? They are very essential. Not only must we think of Krishna, we must understand how to think of Krishna. Unless we understand who we are, what is our relationship with this body, what our relationship with this world is, and what our relationship with God is, there will be no real impetus to take shelter of Krishna or to follow the path of devotional service. These are the most preliminary fundamental truths that must be understood. Who I am. What is this world? What is this body? Because these are things that we are daily in contact with. These things are to our mind and senses, which we are so attached to, they are our reality. Correct? Right now, if you have a toothache, that is the reality of your life. Correct? Yes? Murlidhar? So many people come to you with this reality. It's not that they have a toothache and they come to the dentist, Murlidhar, and say, this is an illusion. I don't need you. They come, please, save me. Take me out of this pain. Yes? Similarly, you're a doctor, you know? You're a medical student? There are many medical students anyway. So many, they know. When people are sick, it becomes the only reality of their life. To somehow or other get out of this pain, this suffering, this misery. So we must understand what is the truth of the relationship between the soul and this body, and the soul and this mind. Because they are such all-pervading realities within our conditioned state. And when we understand what is the relationship, then we gradually, through spiritual practice, learn to transcend the body and the mind. We learn to utilize the body and the mind in a purpose, in a direction that frees us from bondage rather than further perpetuates bondage. The acts of our body through our senses are dictated by the mind, and everything we do incriminates us in karma. Correct? Unless we understand this, we will not know what to do and what not to do. So therefore, the first most important principle is to understand we are not this body. And we are not this mind. But we are the eternal soul. And we are part of Krishna. And how to use this body and its senses, and use this mind and all the thoughts that are being provoked by it in the service of Krishna. then we can actually think of Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, you said that as a devotee, you must not associate with materialistic people or atheistic people. What if they are our next-door neighbors? They want to associate with us, but how do we avoid them?
Very well. Association means we should not come to their platform of enjoyment. A devotee is friendly to everyone. A devotee should be respectful to everyone. But a devotee does not take part in those activities of illusion with anyone. It should be your service to humbly serve that person by elevating their consciousness, but not by allowing them to degrade your consciousness. That is very important. So you make it known to people that you like them, you're respectful to them, but that you have your convictions and you have your way of life and you do not compromise. Make it simple as that. If they come and say, let us go to cinema together, you tell them, I'm going to temple, and if you want to be with me, you come to temple. If they say, let us go to the restaurant together, you say, I'm cooking prasad, and if you want to eat prasad with me, then you can be with me. If they want to come and talk about politics and all gossip, then you tell them that I like to talk about Krishna. If you want to speak nice philosophy, then you come. If you want to speak all this gossip, I'm just not interested. I have higher things to think about. Let people know where you stand. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Don't be ashamed. And then those people, if they actually want to take part in real relationships with you, then they will. And they will not disturb or bother you anymore, because they will know that you don't want to do anything except those activities which are conducive to spiritual life. So you can be neighbors, and you can be friendly and polite, but you do not have to do what they are doing. You invite them to do the works of Krishna. And they can accept or reject. Just like at our temple, we have so many neighbors. But we go on with our business. Some of them are very nice. Some of them, they say namaskar. Some of them come to the temple for darshan. Some of them throw stones through our windows. But we go on with our business. We go on with our service. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, the impersonalists are known to be the followers of Harishankar Acharya. So they follow his philosophy of the Brahman. So that was his instruction. But at the same time, Adishankara instructed them to first go to chant the name of Govindam. So what is the problem with the impersonalist that they are not able to follow this instruction of his?
What is the problem? You see, since time immemorial, we have wanted to assume a position of God. We want to be the proprietor. We want to be the enjoyer. And through so many efforts, by becoming wealthy, by being promoted to heavenly planets, we have endeavored. But Krishna says in Gita, Abrama bhuvanaloka punar avartano arjuna mamupecha tukonteya punar janmana. From the highest planet to the lowest, they are all places of misery, because they are all places of birth and death. However good our karma is, it will expire, and then we are back to our miserable condition of life. So after failing through all of our fruitive endeavors, we may take to the Jnana Khanda, which Shankaracharya taught, through understanding that I am not this, I am not this, I am not this, neti, we eliminate all the forms of illusion, and ultimately we come to that platform of Aham Brahmasmi, that I am just pure spirit, and that pure spirit is God, so I have become God. It is another way of becoming God. So those who still have that inclination, who have not understood, nor do they have the inclination or the desire to come to their real eternal position of the servant of the Lord, they prefer Shankara's philosophy of Tattvam Asi or Aham Brahmasmi. And for those who actually have very pure and humble hearts and do not want to enjoy the position of God artificially, but who genuinely desire to be the servant of the servant of the Lord, they take seriously his words, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam Uttamat. According to our particular desire, according to our particular state of consciousness, we are receptive to various instructions. Does that answer your question? Are there any other questions?
I have a question. But in this bewildering world where we have to constantly fight battles, as you mentioned in the beginning of your lecture, what would be your message for our young medicals and boys and girls out here? What should be their approach to life?
To fight all your battles with great determination, sincerity, and determination. It is your duty to meet the practical expectations of life, but to do it all with the aim of winning the war. To do it all in Krishna consciousness, by building a very strong spiritual foundation, by coming to nice gatherings like tonight regularly, by hearing the truth from the Gita, by asking relevant questions to clear your doubts, by studying these books of Srila Prabhupada's, which is giving such light in the darkness of this world, by regularly cleansing our heart through the chanting of the holy names, and with the spiritual strength derived from this sadhana, which I have just explained, to perform all of our work in this world in a mood of devotion, in a mood of service, in a mood of pleasing the Lord, pleasing Guru, pleasing the devotees. And if we fight all our battles in this mood, every battle is a step forward toward winning the war. And even if you lose all the battles, if you do it in this consciousness, you will win the war. And you will go back home, back to God. It is our practical duties to fight these battles. But it is our eternal duty to do it in a spirit of devotion. And we should not be attached. Krishna says, do not be attached to victory or defeat, success or failure, honor or dishonor, gain or loss. We should not be attached to any of these things that we fight for in this world. We should fight for the sake of fighting. But our attachment should be to please Krishna. And Krishna is pleased when we do whatever we do in a spirit of devotion. Krishna told Arjuna, now this is a battle. If you do it for me, you win the war, even if you lose. He said, if you win this battle, you will put the whole world at my lotus feet. And if you lose this battle and die, you will return to my lotus feet. So what is the difference? He said, you fight for the sake of fighting for my sake. But do not be attached to whether you win or lose. Winning or losing is ultimately a question of our consciousness. Whatever we do, if we do it in Krishna consciousness, we are supremely victorious. Even if we lose everything by material standards. But if we are not Krishna conscious, Hiranyakashipu, he was victorious over the entire universe. But because he had no devotion to God, he ultimately lost miserably. Prahlad, he could not fight against his father. But because he was always remembering Krishna, he ultimately was victorious. So this is our humble message to all of you. Do the best you can in your studies, in your family life, in your work, but do it in a spirit of devotion and detachment. And ultimately, that consciousness will carry you beyond birth and death. That consciousness will carry you to that plane of real blissfulness.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.